The next case for argument is 14-1065 Insight Vision Incorporated v. Sandoz. Mr. Matsui, whenever you're ready.
May it please the Court, Brian Matsui on behalf of Sandoz. The District Court should be reversed because it violated a bedrock principle of patent law. A claim is invalid if it reads on any obvious subject matter. It was only by violating this basic principle that the District Court could conclude that it would not be obvious to make a known effective oral antibiotic into a topical treatment for the very same purpose. This error infected the District Court's consideration of the 411 patent and carried over and infected its consideration of the Insight patents.
Is this, I must admit, I was a little confused, and maybe that's my problem and not yours. You were pressing, spent a great deal of ink on the argument in your briefs that it was they picked the wrong problem to be solved, and that was what led the court astray here. Is that the main impetus for your argument here?
It's a framing of the case or the problem to be solved. The District Court at A39 in its opinion set forth a framing of the obviousness inquiry, and it required Sandoz to show that the full scope of the asserted claims of the 411 patent would be invalid. And that was a legal error because Sandoz was not required to show that with respect to the 411 patent, which recites a method to treat ocular infections using topical azithromycin, Sandoz was not required to show that it would have been obvious to use topical azithromycin for all ocular infections.
Your view is that they only had the only problem to be solved here was conjunctivitis. Is that I really am having a hard time. I really want you to explain to me what your point
Certainly.
Is.
Certainly, I mean I think KSR answers the question in this case because in KSR, the Supreme Court rejected the patentee's argument that the motivation or the problem the patentee was trying to solve with respect to the mechanical pedal that was improved was the only motivation that there could be, and the Supreme Court rejected that.
But why would we narrow the problem here to just conjunctivitis, reading the patent and the specification, reading claims and the specification?
We agree. I mean, I think that the problem, it's any problem that's within the scope of the claim
right.
can provide a reason to invalidate it. So it just doesn't have to be one problem, but that's what the District Court did in this case. It framed the issue as a matter of law to require Sandoz to show that the full scope of the claim was invalid. And so that was how it identified the problem or the framing of the case.
I'm confused because it seems to me you're confusing two things. The framing of the problem to be solved, which is different from the issue of whether something is obvious if it's broader than a particular species of prior art.
Well,
in other words, if there's something to show or teach the use of azithromycin to solve conjunctivitis, that would necessarily invalidate or at least raise a question about obviousness with respect to a broader recited claim for the use of azithromycin topically for any purpose. But that's different from the framing of the problem to be solved.
You're right, Your Honor. That's correct. I mean, that's what we have here with respect to this patent, the 411 patent. We have a broad claim that reads on ocular infections for both conjunctivitis and for corneal infections. And we have in the prior art a well-known effective oral antibiotic that was made into a topical treatment to treat the same bacteria. And so that's the epitome of obvious. It just might be a more narrow solution to the problem that the patentee might have wanted to solve with respect to the 411 patent. But with respect to the 411 patent, it reads on ocular infections as a whole, not just conjunctivitis and not just corneal infections. And the District Court, when it framed the case, and I'm sorry to keep on going back to the framing of the case or the problem to be solved, but when it framed the case, it required Sandoz to show that there was a motivation and a reasonable expectation of success to demonstrate that it would be obvious to take azithromycin and make it into a topical treatment for all ocular infections. And that's evidenced by the fact that the district court noted that there were a number of different antibiotics that a person of ordinary skill in the art might have preferred. And the reason why the district court discounted the idea that azithromycin would be used was because those other antibiotics, like fluoroquinolone, were potentially better against corneal infections. But that's not what Sandoz was required to prove. And putting aside the whole preference issue, it's also this court's precedent that the mere fact that there might be another preferred goal that a person of ordinary skill in the art might like to solve doesn't make the incremental improvement any less obvious. For example, if just because someone might have preferred to use fluoroquinolones doesn't mean that improvement of azithromycin as a topical treatment wouldn't be any less obvious.
What about the ISV patents? You didn't rely, it seems to me, the 411 patent was excluded as prior art in consideration of the obviousness of those patents, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And how did that happen? I mean, it seems to me that might well have affected the result here, whether or not 411 was in or out, and you all neglected to put it in there as part of your obviousness contention.
That's not entirely accurate, Your Honor. Well, first of all, we think we don't need the 411 patent to demonstrate the obviousness of the Insight patents. But the 411 patent clearly is prior art to the Insight patents, and we listed it as prior art in our invalidity contentions. What the district court did is it said that our expert, Dr. Reed, could not testify as to the 411 patent because he didn't have it in his expert report. But that doesn't make the 411 patent not prior art. You don't need to have an expert to sponsor the 411 patent as prior art.
And you did list the 411 patent as one of the references you were going to rely on, correct?
We did. We did, Your Honor. They don't dispute that. The only thing is that our expert should, according to the district court, should not have been allowed to testify as to the 411 patent being prior art. And so the district court...
I thought he affirmatively said that he wasn't going to rely on it. He used the cutoff date of whatever, December 1996 or something like that, and said, we are not relying on patents post that date.
He wasn't.
That would have come off.
That is correct.
Well, he's the expert that was presented to make the case, right?
I mean, but that doesn't...
When the expert that's making the case says this is how we're putting together obviousness and we're not going to consider any patents past a certain date, doesn't that kind of at least put the other side on notice that this patent is not in play with respect to this issue?
Not in the situation where we listed the 411 patent as prior art for the Insight patent in our invalidity contentions. And certainly it would be new for this court.
The district court refused to consider it, right?
It refused to consider it, and then it also addressed the 411 patent as a backlog.
Well, as far as the refusal to consider it, do we review that for an abuse of discretion here?
Perhaps, but that would be a legal error to not consider the 411 as prior art as prior art for the Insight patents. Because this court has never held, that we can see, that you would say that a prior art reference is not prior art simply because there's no expert to sponsor it. We had testimony from the 411 patent inventor to discuss the 411 patent.
Are you saying that there's an obligation for the judge to go through the list of all of the references that are cited to see what's relevant and what isn't, if the expert decides not to include those references in the expert report?
I think if there was absolutely no mention of the 411 patent, it might be a different case where a laundry list of prior art references might not be considered. But we had testimony in this record discussing the 411 patent as prior art from the inventor of the 411 patent. We had argument before the district court with respect to the 411 patent.
So why did the expert exclude the 411 because of its date?
Right? Yes, in its expert report, the expert
And I didn't see that there was anything changed in terms of the cutoff date overall. Is that accurate?
Only with respect to the expert, Your Honor, it doesn't mean that the 411 wouldn't be prior art to the inside patents.
Well, exactly, but how is a judge to confront complicated scientific technological issues in a way that diverges from the way the expert says they should be confronted?
That's not this case where the 411 patent being used as prior art needs an expert to sponsor it. We had the testimony of Dr. Ahmed on the 411 patent. It certainly, there was no indication that the district court did not understand the 411 patent. It would be new precedent from this court to hold that the 411 patent isn't prior art simply because it didn't have an expert, one expert to sponsor it.
Even if we look at the 411 patent as a reference, as a prior art reference to the ISV patents, what is it in that reference that supports the notion that the later ISV patents are obvious?
Well, there's several things, Your Honor. I mean, just to step back on the inside patents, we don't need the 411 patents to invalidate the inside patents. I mean, the district court had its framing error with respect to the 411 patents, and it just carried it through when it considered the inside patents. It effectively started the obviousness inquiry where it left off, as if topical azithromycin didn't exist to treat conjunctivitis. And so what we had in the prior art, and because of that, the district court required us to choose azithromycin out of all the possible antibiotics that are out there, and polycarbophil out of all the possible delivery vehicles that are out there. But that's not required under this court's precedent or the Supreme Court's precedent. It's just like the Asano pedal, Your Honor, where the patentee argued that you have to start from a blank slate. You had to show that there was a reason to choose the Asano pedal and the electronic sensor to put them together. The Supreme Court rejected that. It said that all you need is a person of ordinary skill in the art to see a benefit of improving the Asano pedal with the electronic sensor. And that's what the district court didn't consider here. We had topical azithromycin, and there would have been a benefit to include polycarbophil with it. That's demonstrated by Insight's own 535 patent, which says that you can use a water-based gel to help deliver topical drug to the eye more effectively for prolonged durations, and it expressly teaches that you can use the inferior parent of azithromycin, erythromycin, as a medicament that can be delivered.
Wasn't there some concern raised in the testimony of the experts about azithromycin's being subject to degradation in a water-based gel?
There was some testimony that might, according to the district court, lead to a preference away from azithromycin, but we have the Bauman reference, which the district court discusses at A64, and we have the Duracite presentation, and both of those are where Insight is basically saying that you can use Duracite and polycarbophil as a general purpose drug delivery vehicle to deliver insoluble drugs, high molecular weight drugs to the eye. So a person of ordinary skill in the art would see that you would want to use polycarbophil to deliver azithromycin, which
not if you were concerned about degradation.
The 411 patent then, I think, answers that question, because examples 5 and 7 of the 411 patent say that you can use an aqueous-based gel to deliver a polyacrylic acid, which is like polycarbophil, to the eye.
Wasn't there some question about whether the carbopol 934P was a water-based gel?
If we turn to the 411 patent, which is at example 5 in column 3, mm-hmm. I mean, it right there it says 87.29% is water at around line 64. It's talking about this being a water-based gel here. Mm-hmm. If there's no further questions, I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. As we stated in our opening brief, there's a series of fact findings that Sando needs to show are clearly erroneous for this court to reverse.
You want to respond, though, to your friend, I mean, we've obviously
Absolutely.
Read your briefs carefully, but to your friend's argument with respect to the identifying the problem to be solved.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Let me start by saying identifying the problem is inherently a factual issue. That's what the judge did. She put herself in the shoes of a person of ordinary skill in the art as of the appropriate time frame and asked the question, what would that person have looked at? And thus her framing of the question is very broad, as you pointed out, Judge Prost. It's very broad. It would include, actually, and encompasses the framing that Sando proposes. And what she said is, if I put myself in the shoes of a person of ordinary skill in the art, I would look at the art very generally. I would look at other potential compounds. I would look at the activity of azithromycin and the other macrolides. I would look at the mechanism.
But what is the problem we're trying to solve? Is it just conjunctivitis, or is it every eye problem?
It's simply a desire to develop a topical treatment for ocular infections in general.
Okay.
Now, if they could show that for some reason it was obvious to make a formulation to treat conjunctivitis using azithromycin, then perhaps they would have a point. But they never made that showing. And what the district court did is that she looked at all of the art. And the first step of that analysis was to figure out, well, what did the art tell us about the antibiotics in general, not just azithromycin, which is why, for example, she looked at the art which said that azithromycin was a poor choice, were a poor choice for topical ophthalmic formulations, and that, of course, would include azithromycin. She looked at the art and the 100 or so potential options and said, well, Sando's expert, he didn't consider any of those options. There's no evidence as to how the POSA would select one over the other. Sando's expert didn't say, well, I would pick azithromycin because there's some special property about it. Not at all. So the framing issue, I think she got it completely right. She made the question broad. She let Sando bring in whatever evidence they thought was relevant to the broad question. On contrast, Sando's framing is really hindsight. If you think about it, it starts out with azithromycin. The question, right in the question, is would azithromycin be something that would be obvious? So it starts with azithromycin. So what does that do? I don't think it's that subtle, but we said it in our brief. It basically carves out all the art that talks about all the other potential options that a person of ordinary skill would consider, and it carves out the art that talks about the detriments to using azithromycin topically. It wasn't just that it was a poor choice. It was the mechanism of action of azithromycin was not applicable to topical ophthalmic formulations because it uses phagocytosis, which we've gone into great detail in our brief about. So at the end of the day, the district court got it right with regard to the framing of the issue. We think it's a fact issue that should be reviewed at clearly erroneous, and we believe that it wasn't clearly erroneous. I may also point out one thing. In the opening brief, Sando heavily relied on the Alcon research case, and they said that shows that this court has said that framing the problem is a legal issue. Well, that case doesn't hold that at all. And in fact, the Alcon research supports a finding of affirmance here because, as the court knows, in Alcon research, there were 8 claims. 6 of the claims, it was a prior art reference that had overlapping concentrations of the drug at issue, olodatapine. There were 2 claims that were the prior art was not within that. The prior art reference was outside of that specific concentration. This court found the 6 claims were obvious, but as to the claims that were outside of the specific concentration of the reference, this court found that those claims were not obvious. And Sando does not deny in their reply brief 2 things. One, that the claims that were found non-obvious in Alcon research are analogous to the 411 claims. And 2, they don't make any argument that there's any overlapping. They don't point to any reference in our case where there was a prior art reference that had an overlapping concentration. In fact, their expert said there's no disclosure in the prior art of topical ophthalmic azithromycin at all. So I'd like to go back to where Sando's counsel ended, which is the InSight Vision patents, and address something that we think is very important because, as the court may appreciate, the InSight Vision patents are the last to expire. So unless Sando can show that those claims were invalid, their product is not going to be able to make it to the market.
As you get into this, I have a question about whether the 411 patent was considered or not considered,
Absolutely.
Whether it was in the case or not in the case. And I want to direct you to your, this was your client's motion in limine to preclude Sandoz from relying on prior art after November 1996. And specifically in the appendix page A2314. Okay. Are you with me?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and the bottom of that page, facts, it says Sandoz bears the burden of proof on obviousness and was required to present its obviousness assertions in its opening expert reports.
Right, Your Honor.
I couldn't find any requirement that that Sandoz was required to state its position on obviousness in the opening expert reports. There's a reference there in the parenthetical to the pretrial scheduling order,
right.
And the pretrial scheduling order is just, you know, a general requirement that you state your defenses at some point.
Actually, Your Honor, in this particular pretrial order, which we don't have in the record, but my specific recollection, having practiced in New Jersey for many years now, is that there, in fact, are patent law rules in New Jersey which require the defendant to cite its defenses fairly early on in the litigation. And what this is referring
right.
to are the rules saying that you need, for your invalidity defenses, you need to state all of your defenses fairly early on in the litigation.
I don't disagree with you.
Okay.
I looked at that scheduling order and I agree that that's what it said. But I didn't say that it said that it has to be in the expert report. Because clearly, Sandoz set forth the 411 patent as one of its defenses, listed it as a reference in its obviousness.
Right, so it did. But here's what happened as we went into the discovery. We got into discovery and I specifically asked Dr. Reed, their expert, if they were relying on prior art after December 1996 for both the 411 patent and also the Insight Vision patents. And he expressly said no. At that point in time, as a litigant, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I don't have to worry about asking Dr. Reed any questions about the 411 patent because he's now, with regard to the Insight Vision patent, just to be clear, because he sort of carved that out. And in fact, when I at his deposition, I asked him that question several times. And you may note in the trial record, we had a discussion with Judge Cooper when we got to this point of the litigation. And I specifically pointed all this out. And she asked me the question, well, did their counsel on redirect say, oh, no, he made a mistake for these patents. He's going to rely on a different date. And the answer was no, he did not. So then we get into trial, and I asked them the very same questions again. Is your cutoff date December 1996? And he said, yes.
But just because their expert decides that he's going to confine himself to an analysis that doesn't include the 411, does that mean that they've necessarily waived the reliance on the 411 entirely?
Well, I think Judge Newman brought this point up, which is when you're have a technical issue, you need to have expert time testimony. In fact, in the Provera Scientific case, which is at 536 F3rd, at 1267, this court said expert testimony is required in a patent dispute where, quote, subject matter is sufficiently complex to fall beyond the grasp of an ordinary layperson, close quote. And what that means to me is you can't expect the district court just to review the patent on their own. Now, counsel made reference
to... But that's different from saying that it was waived or it's not before the court when it was listed as a reference. Maybe there's a question of whether just listing the reference was enough to carry the day when you're trying to persuade a court or a jury on a question. But it seems to me that you are you making the argument that the 411 patent was waived as a reference?
We're making the argument that Dr. Reed was not allowed to testify about it. And
I understand,
and
but that's
I'm not
a
saying
separate
it was
question,
a, right,
because it was listed separately
yes,
as a reference.
Right, and that met the requirements. So we wouldn't be able to argue waiver per se, but the consequences of him of using that cutoff is that there's no testimony from Sando to prove that reference shows obviousness. Putting all that aside for the moment.
Was there any argument?
Well, the district court heard evidence from Dr. Reed extensively on the 411 patent. There's page and page in the record about the 411 patent. As we point out in our brief, The testimony that our brief talks about the 411 patent extensively, that testimony came mostly from Dr. Reed. Dr. Reed was the one who admitted that the 411 patent only disclosed, the inventor only used an ointment. Dr. Reed admitted that the ointment was preferred. Dr. Reed admitted it doesn't disclose polycarbophil. Dr. Reed admitted that it doesn't have any stability data. And in fact, Your Honor, we think the stability and solubility issue puts to rest any argument by Sandoz that the claims are obvious. But at the end of the day, much of that testimony came right from Dr. Reed. Our expert, Dr. Lee, also put in testimony. His primary testimony was that, look, these water-based formulations, they're going to have a problem because of stability.
So you're saying even if it did come in, it doesn't make any difference?
Even if it was wrong, there's no harm here because they got all the evidence in. The district court explicitly said, even though I think the cutoff is correct based on his testimony, I'm going to hear all the evidence on the 411. It's right in her decision. I don't have the site right on top of my head, but it's right at the beginning part of the Insight Vision discussion where she says the cutoff applies. But then she goes on to say, well, but I heard the testimony anyhow because I know there's going to appeal. And what I heard was the following. It doesn't render the Insight Vision claims obvious. And she considered all the experts on that point. At the end of the day, I think that's dispositive as to the 411. The arguments about the various polymers that were out there, what the district court said, again, is she heard evidence from all of the experts, including Dr. Lee and Dr. Reed. And what she said is I credit Dr. Lee's understanding of what a person of ordinary skill in the art would be faced with as of that time frame with regard to all the polymers. And Dr. Lee said, I would never use a water-based polymer because of the stability issues. But if I were forced, there's a multitude, many hundreds of various things that could be done here. And the first thing I would do was I would use a thing called a colloidal because that might protect the active from stability issues.
What's your comment about the statement at the bottom of column 3 in the 411 patent about that one example where it's 87% water?
So polycarbophil 934 is a water-based polymer, but it's much different, as Dr. Reed and Dr. Lee explained, than polycarbophil, which is the subject matter of the Insight Vision claims.
So wouldn't that teach away from the idea or counter the idea that, well, a person of skill in the art wouldn't want to use azithromycin in a water-based gel?
What Dr. Lee said and what Dr. Ahmed, the inventor of the 411 patent, said is that even though these are at bench scale basis, you still would have a concern about stability because it was well known and established and uncontroverted that azithromycin was susceptible to stability issues, and also it had solubility issues, so whether you could have kept the molecule in solution sufficiently to make a product was also at issue. The district court heard that argument and that from Dr. Reed. She took all that into consideration and she found in favor of plaintiffs and against the defendants. I don't see plaintiffs saying that that was clear error in any meaningful way, nor can they. And just to make the final point on the polycarbophil, the carbophil 934, the testimony in the record is that at first, there's no evidence that it's an in situ gel like polycarbophil is, the subject of the Insight Vision patents. And second of all, Dr. Reed said that that carbophil 934 was water soluble. Polycarbophil is not. Dr. Reed admitted it's swellable and water insoluble. And in fact, several of the claims require a water insoluble polymer. So at the end of the day, the district court took into consideration all the evidence from Reed and Lee regarding this example, as well as the inventor, Dr. Ahmed, and agreed with us that nothing in that patent alleviated the stability issues. There was nothing in the patent that showed stability data, for example, and the inventor clearly used only an ointment in order to make his formulations in the example. I know my time is almost up. I just want to quickly make one point on the 411 patent again, is that what the district court basically found is that Sandoz used references that related to oral azithromycin. And both sides' experts said, look, oral administration is much different than topical ophthalmic administration. Topical ophthalmic is a really specialized area that's very difficult and complex, as the district court found. And so all the data relating oral to oral azithromycin effectively isn't relevant to whether the molecule itself would be able to penetrate the ocular tissue of the eye. There's other reasons cited in our brief for supporting the 411 claims, but my time is up, so I'll rest.
Thank you.
This court has never held that the problem to be solved or the framing is a factual question. That would be inconsistent with the Supreme Court's decision in KSR. KSR makes clear that any problem to be solved that is encompassed by the claims makes those claims invalid. The district court violated this basic principle. All the findings that my colleague on the other side is discussing go to that wrong framing. They go to requiring Sandoz to show that it applied to corneal infections, not just conjunctivitis. With respect to the 411 patents, if I can just bring up one point, the district court said that that was a prophetic example, but that's not correct. That conflates enablement with obviousness. In the 411 patent, the example 5 and 7 would certainly be in there for all that they teach, and they definitely teach that you could use it in an aqueous-based gel. What we have here, if you take away the framing error and you permit Sandoz to show that it would be obvious to use topical azithromycin to treat bacterial conjunctivitis, we have an obvious claim. All the inventors did here is they took a known child of a known inferior parent, and they used it in the very same way. And then with the InSight patents, all they did was they took a general purpose delivery vehicle and combined it with topical azithromycin. If you take away the district court's framing error, its error with respect to the problem to be solved, the claims are invalid.
Thank you. We thank both counsel, and the case is submitted.